Welcome to episode 85. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. Members may be aware that the requirements as to what needs to be completed before the caretaker period commences have altered. Whereas previously we were required to reach agreement in principle, we are now required to have agreements lodged with the Fair Work Commission by the end of October. For that reason, there's been a significant amount of activity for us in the past few weeks with regards to the last few remaining public sector agreements for a round that began in 2016. Those agreements are the general and specialist dentists, biomedical engineers, and dental therapists. With the exception of the dental therapists, these are multi-employer agreements. What that means is that it will be necessary to encourage employees at your worksite to vote. That will become critical. Each health service needs a successful vote in order to be party to that multi-employer agreement. This week, there's also a doctor's SDP PWG. We'll be discussing the proposed savings schedules a bit more and identifying some of the provisions that appear to us to be unnecessary to be saved, including things such as jury service. But we're also aware of a large amount of activity in the field, particularly with respect to long service leave matters. If a long service leave dispute has been raised at your workplace by the AMA, please do let us know. Regarding community health, the Health and Allied Agreement is now progressing towards ballot. We are still working to conclude the last few matters regarding the allied health professionals and medical scientists. The HRIR Manager Group for Community Health meets this week. And just a reminder of the upcoming Four Birds, One Stone Occupational Violence and Aggression Forum, which will be conducted at the ANMF. This forum is aimed at HR people and culture people, as well as DONS and EDONS, OHS directors and CEOs from facilities and networks across the Victorian public health sector. VHAA are jointly presenting, and we will be there, and we're looking forward to your attendance at that event. As always, all of our activities are summarised through the VHA Community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup.
Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in-depth with a particular topic. And joining me today is workplace relations consultant Maria Coppolis. Welcome, Maria.
Thanks, Daniel.
So, Maria, you've done this before. Would you mind showing our viewers what is under the box and
sure.
The clue for this week's podcast? So you have there an iPhone.
It's an iPhone.
Now, would you mind pressing play, please?
I want some purity.
So based on the song that you're hearing, what would you say is the clue and the topic, sorry, for today's podcast?
Given the title of the song is Security, I'd probably say it has something to do with the security review.
Look, it does. Well done. And look, maybe the topic of the title of the song might have been a dead giveaway. The song Security is by Otis Redding, and it's his 1964 hit. It was also from his album A Pain in My Heart. So you're right. The topic today is the security review, but if you have a pain in your heart, you will need patient transport. So the topic for today is the security and patient transport review outcomes. And those outcomes come out of the Health and Allied Management and Admin Officers Agreement.
Perfect. To assist those with the agreement in front of them, which clauses will we be discussing today?
So today we're talking about Clause 110.1, which deals with security officer review, and Clause 110.2, which deals with the patient transport review.
Understand we've also provided a bulletin with respect to these outcomes.
So we have. So on the 27th of September this year, we issued Bulletin 2348, which provides the outcomes for both the security officer and patient transport officer review.
And starting with the security officer review, what was the scope of the review?
So Clause 110.1 of the agreement provided that within the first 12 months of the agreement coming into effect, VHIA and the HW, together with representation, will review the security officer classification contained within Schedule 2D of the agreement.
And I understand the intention of the security officer review was to recognise and reward security officers who perform additional responsibilities and who hold additional qualifications.
That's correct. So the agreement actually sets out an exhaustive list of the matters that need to be taken into account. These include security licensing, qualifications, the duties of coordinating in the daily running of a security department, the responsibility of being in charge of a security department, and a list of duties which include CCTV and alarm monitoring, liaising with police, undertaking risk assessments, ID card allocations, fire panel responsibilities, mortuary duties, and security safe responsibilities.
And what have the parties agreed?
The parties agreed to introducing a minimum qualification and a translation grade for unqualified security officers, to better define security officer duties, introduce a new classification and descriptors which better reflect current and future practice in the sector, and also introducing a certificate allowance for security officers and providing for the translation of existing security officers into the new classification structure.
Now, starting with the minimum qualification, what is the new minimum qualification requirement for a security officer in the Victorian public health sector?
So it was agreed between the parties that the minimum qualification requirement for security officers in the Victorian public health sector should match those required for licensing in accordance with the Private Security Act 2004 VIC. This is the equivalent of an unarmed guard, which is a Certificate 2 in unarmed guard, or where appropriate for a control room operator, which is Certificate 2 control room operator.
And what happens to existing security officers who don't hold the minimum qualification?
So it was agreed that an unqualified security officer who was employed and who performed security officer duties prior to the first full pay period on or after the 1st of October this year will translate to the new Security Officer Grade 1A transitional grade.
I understand these unqualified security officers will be required to obtain a minimum qualification by the first full pay period on or after 1 October 2019.
So that's correct. It was agreed that existing unqualified security officers will be provided paid leave and reimbursement of course fees to obtain the minimum qualification.
I note that the security officer grade 1 transitional cannot be used to classify new employees beyond 1 October 2018.
So that's correct. So the intention of this grade is to allow existing unqualified security officers to obtain the appropriate minimum qualification.
Can Security Officer Grade 1A Transitional continue to perform their security officer duties?
They can.
So moving now to the new definition of security officer duties, what do these include?
So as I mentioned earlier, the scope of the security officer review had to address the roles and responsibilities of security officers. I've provided the non-exhaustive list of security officer duties on the screen.
So the security officer duties on the screen are non-exhaustive?
Correct. Just because the duty or task isn't listed doesn't mean it cannot be required of a security officer. It's also important to note that these security-related duties may overlap with existing roles, for example, patient services assistants.
So does the introduction of the security officer duties vary existing arrangements for non-security staff?
No. So these classification descriptors are not intended to vary roles and responsibilities of non-security officer classifications. And this includes clinical and non-clinical staff involved in code responses and other emergencies as part of a hospital response team.
Moving to the new classification descriptors, we've already discussed Security Officer Grade 1A. Tell me about the new Security Officer Grade 1 CCTV operator classification.
So this classification is brand new to the sector. It's to be used, to be utilised where a qualified security officer who performs security officer duties in the Victorian public health sector has a predominant focus on managing control room operations, including CCTV monitoring and response.
So the security officer grade 1 CCTV operator must have a minimum qualification and perform security officer duties with a predominant focus on managing control room operations, including CCTV monitoring and response.
That's correct. It may be that not all members require this classification currently, but there is an emerging trend in its use.
What does Security Officer Grade 2 involve?
So this classification will be utilised where a qualified security officer performs security officer duties in the Victorian public health sector.
So if you're a security officer who holds a minimum qualification and you perform security officer duties, you'll be classified as a Security Officer Grade 2.
That's correct.
So I understand there is a new classification for security officers who are in charge of other security officers.
Correct. So Security Officer Grade 3 is a classification for a qualified security officer who performs security officer duties in the Victorian public health sector and is in charge of other security officers.
And do they also receive the in-charge allowance in accordance with Clause 37 of the agreement?
So yes, they would. So a security officer grade 3 is appointed or delegated to exercise control over other employees. So they'll be paid an in-charge allowance, which is equivalent to the relevant percentage outlined at the in-charge allowance clause at Clause 37 of Section 2 of the agreement.
I also believe there is a certificate allowance for security officers.
That's correct. So where a security officer holds a relevant security qualification that exceeds that required of licensing for an unarmed guard or where appropriate a control room operator, a weekly certificate allowance of 4% of the security officer grade 2 rate, which is calculated on the base rate, would be payable, and that's a part-time pro rata benefit.
I understand that prior to 1 January 2010, the minimum qualification was a certificate 3. Does a security officer who holds that qualification receive an allowance?
So no, the certificate allowance will not be payable to security officers who hold a certificate 3 in security operations or equivalent obtained prior to 1 January 2010.
We've developed a table which provides the transition of existing classifications to the new security officer structure from the first full pay period on or after 1 October 2018. Can you briefly talk to members through this?
So I can. So members would note that on the screen there is a table which is also reflected in the bulletin. It provides that existing classifications where a security officer didn't possess a minimum qualification will translate to the grade 1A transitional classification, which you've mentioned earlier. They'll note that the next classification is for security officers who predominantly work in control room operations. There is no classification currently that applies to that, so we wouldn't expect that any existing employees will immediately translate to that role unless there are any security officers whose roles do involve CCTV or predominantly involve CCTV operation. The third grade, being security officer grade 2, is for any security officer who is performing security officer duties and possess the minimum qualification. We'd expect that most security officers in the Victorian public health sector will be classified under the new security officer grade 2 classification. And finally, security officer grade 3 is for any security officer who is both performing security officer duties and qualified, but also in charge of other security officers.
And I understand there are new rates attached to these classifications.
So that's correct. So VHA provided the rates of pay for both the new security officer classifications and the certificate allowance in Bulletin 2348.
Moving on to the patient transport review, what is the scope of this review?
So patient transport review is provided at 110.2 of the agreement, and it provides that within the first 12 months of the agreement commencing, VHA and the HW will review the classifications in Schedule 2D that provide patient transport.
So I understand the purpose of this review was to recognise additional qualifications and create career pathways for employees that perform patient transport.
So that's correct. So the agreement sets out matters for consideration, and that includes for training and qualifications, including Cert 3 in non-emergency patient transports, Cert 4 in health science with a major in ambulance, and the Diploma of Paramedical Science in ambulance or equivalent, but also the performance of additional duties such as ECGs and EEGs.
So what are the review outcomes?
So the copy of the agreed outcomes has been circulated to members in Bulletin 2348. The changes will take effect from the first full pay period on or after 1 October this year. And these include translating existing employees without loss of pay to the new classifications and descriptors, which are specific to the patient transport officers. It maintains existing experience payments, provides for training support and a patient transport officer certificate allowance.
So starting with the translation of existing classifications, can you please outline which classifications we'll be translating?
So the current classification of driver of a vehicle less than 1.25 tonnes will translate to patient transport officer grade 1, where the duties and responsibilities involve the transport of medically stable patients between sites. The existing classification of driver of a vehicle between 1.25 and 3 tonnes, whose duties involve the transport of medically stable patients between sites, will translate to patient transport officer grade 2. Also, ambulance driver / assistant other will transfer to patient transport officer grade 2, but also in prescribed health services only, patient services assistants who are required as part of their duties to assist in the transfer of patients from a helipad, whether by trolley, ambulance or other vehicle. And finally, ambulance drivers or assistance certificate would translate to patient transport officer grade 3.
And how will the new classification descriptors interact with the existing classifications?
Okay. So from the first full pay period on or after 1 October 2018, existing ambulance driver assistant classifications will be replaced by the classification descriptors contained within this schedule. But for existing driver and patient services assistant classifications, these will continue to operate to the extent they operate outside the scope of the classification descriptors contained within this schedule.
For the benefit of those who are listening to the podcast, can you run us through the new patient transport officer descriptors?
I can. So patient transport officer grade one means a person employed to use a vehicle that is not an ambulance, that weighs less than 1.25 tonne to transport medically stable patients between sites. Patient transport officer grade two means a person employed to use a vehicle that is not an ambulance, that weighs between 1.25 and 3 tonne to transport medically stable patients between sites. Or a person who does not hold a St John First Aid Certificate employed to use an ambulance to transport medically stable patients between sites, or a person who is classified as a patient services assistant in a prescribed health service, as defined, who is required as part of their duties to assist in the transfer of patients from a helipad, whether by trolley, ambulance or other vehicle. And finally, patient transport officer grade 3 means a person who holds a first aid certificate or similar relevant training and are employed to drive an ambulance or assist the driver of an ambulance in the transport of medically stable patients between sites.
So you mentioned that the patient services assistants who perform helipad transfers will be translated to the patient transport officer grade 2 level within the prescribed health services only. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean?
So it was agreed between the parties that the translation of PSAs or patient services assistants that perform helipad transfers would only apply to some of the health services covered by the agreement. The term prescribed health services was agreed to capture the following health services. And they're provided up on the screen as well. So it covers Alfred Health, Austin Health, Barwon Health, Calvary Health Care Bethlehem Limited, DHSV, Eastern Health, Melbourne Health, Mercy Public Hospital, Monash Health, Northern Health, Peninsula Health, Petermac, the Children's, the Ioneer, the Women's, St V's and Western Health.
So can translating PSA still perform their usual duties under the new classification?
So they can. So employees can still perform PSA duties in addition to helipad transfers whilst classified as patient transport officer grade 2.
If you're a member who is not a prescribed health service but their PSAs perform helipad transfers, are they captured under the patient transport review?
They're not.
With the introduction of certificate allowance for patient transport officers, employees will now receive an additional allowance where they hold a recognised qualification. What are the recognised qualifications?
So for a patient transport officer that holds a certificate 3 in non-emergency patient transport, there's a 3% of the wage scale group 7 rate for an allowance. Certificate 4 in healthcare ambulance receives 4% of the wage scale group 7 weekly rate. And patient transport officers who hold a diploma of paramedical science receive 5% of the Group 7 or wage scale Group 7 weekly rate.
And I understand that there are new rates attached to these classifications.
So that's correct. So much like the security officers, we provided the rates of pay for the patient transport officers and the patient transport certificate allowance in Bulletin 2348.
I understand that funding has also been allocated for the additional training of patient transport staff.
They have. So $60,000 will be available in the 2019-2020 financial year to support the employees to obtain a Certificate 4 in non-emergency patient transport.
And I understand that there is a requirement for members to notify employees that their current classification is changing as a result of the translation?
That's correct. So employers will confirm in writing to affected employees to which classification they've transferred no later than 1 month from the date of translation, and that is for both security officers but also patient transport officers.
Perfect. And have we provided template letters to assist members with this process?
Look, we have. A template letter is available for both the security officers and patient transport officer outcomes, and these are available in Bulletin 2348.
For both security officers and patient transport officer outcomes, what occurs if there is a dispute about the correct translating classification or other related dispute?
So where a dispute arises as to the proper implementation of the review outcomes that cannot be resolved locally, then the matter will be dealt with in accordance with Clause 7, which deals with the dispute resolution procedure. So thank you, Maria, for joining me today and talking through both the security officer and the patient transport review. We might finish now with a song from our friend Otis Redding. Thank you, Maria.
Thanks, Daniel.